Namaste and welcome to this week three of the graduate program homework for February 2021. So we'll get started. We have nine to go through today. So maybe we'll do them in two parts. So the first one says, "Hi, Helen. I was having a strong seeing into how my mind was very hard on myself, even violent thoughts towards myself, which is interesting as I'm not aware of ever having violent thoughts to anyone out there. But I obviously set a much higher standard for myself. I hit a major trigger event the other day and went into a real spiral as on top of the usual self-recrimination, I was telling myself I was supposed to now be loving myself. Anyhow, I was much helped by the amazing folk on the recent Sangha meetup and could begin to see how my ego was great at attacking itself, as someone pointed out. Some real light and connection to the real self was re-established, thanks. My question, I had a thought that loving my ego inside is the same as loving those outside, and my job is to love all no matter if I like them or not." So this is very profound, isn't it? You're kind of seeing clearer the nature of ego now that you're loving it more. And loving it doesn't mean necessarily succeeding in the way that we think. Loving it means being willing to see, really, 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 really willing to see what's going on in there. Most of us blame or push away or vilify the ego, make it the bad guy. And the fact that you're seeing this stuff is evidence of your love for it and yourself. beginning to pervade that. We can't see these things that are really going on in there to undo them until we're willing to see. And willingness to see is a form of love. So it's very important to recognize you are succeeding, even if it doesn't look like the way you think success in loving yourself will be, especially if you don't think, if it doesn't look like what you think it would. So seeing these things is the first step to releasing them. And you're seeing, as you've said, that you're so much harder on yourself than anyone else. And that is very, very common, isn't it? That we hold ourselves to impossibly high standards and then blame ourselves for not achieving those standards, or so we think. You know, if we come to clearly see that what standard we're holding ourselves to is based on where we think we're at in this moment. Ego has a picture of where it thinks you are in this moment, who it thinks you are, what it thinks you have achieved. And then it's projecting into the future saying, but you must be like this before you're good enough. You must be like that. Or you must let go of this thing or that thing before you are good enough. You must overcome these karmic patterns, et cetera, whatever it's saying. So if you can see the ego can't really see the truth of your being, it's only making an assessment on where you are and where it thinks you should be based on what it thinks is going on. It's like asking a fish to determine what's happening and what should happen outside of the fishbowl. You know, it doesn't have any dominion outside of the fishbowl, does it? And it's just swimming around there from what it can see from its perspective, saying, this is what it thinks you are, and this is what it thinks you should be. And depending on the gap between what it thinks you are, who it thinks you are now in your human beingness, and where it thinks you should be, depends on how much it will like you, it will accept, or will attack itself. And of course, most of us, there's a huge gap between where we think we should be and where we think we are now. But as we come to recognize these are perspectives of ego, and therefore are not bad, they're just very, very limited. You can't expect the fish in the bowl swimming around in the water to understand the space in the room that the fish bowl, this tiny little fish bowl with a fish in it, it can't understand the space in the room, can it? And it cannot understand anything that's happening outside of the bowl. So, you know, it really, if we really begin to understand this, this is a form of love. And the fact that you're seeing it now means somewhere inside you want to see it. And that's significant for me. Huge. Absolutely huge. The biggest battle is willingness to see. Willingness to see. We're all very willing to see what is true. And we have to take a little time sometimes to develop that willingness to see what isn't true. And then to see it without judgment, because that just sustains it. This is what my ego thinks, and it's not true, and I don't have to push it away. I just don't have to agree with it anymore. So significant to me. And your question, some real light and connection reestablished, very good. And I had a thought that loving my ego inside is the same as loving those outside. And my job is to love all, no matter if I like them or not. Absolutely. Very, very true. And in loving everyone, it's easy to love everyone when you know what everyone is, that they are the self. That doesn't mean you agree, like, or condone their actions, the way that they speak, or the way that they're affecting the world, you know, affecting their environment. And it's okay to prefer to be around much more sattvic, awake people than those that are rioting and, you know, all that kind of stuff, or doing harm to other beings. Of course, you wouldn't want to be around them. Eventually, that is out of respect for the body, for the gift that we've been given to be able to see what we are in this body, rather than fear. You know, vibrationally, you won't even be able to be around them as you move away, but as you move into more self-love. That's got to mirror back to you as those around you loving you more, accepting you more unconditionally. And then those that don't will have to leave your experience or change to love you unconditionally. Most often it's the first one. But there's no confrontation in that. They just kind of drift away because they can't really handle the amount of love that's coming out of you. You know, that kind of, it's just too... It contradicts their own unworthiness, which is fueling their own actions. So it's easy to love everyone knowing what they are. Love the self appearing as everyone. That's not the same as liking or accepting or agreeing with. And this is what we're doing with ego first, isn't it? You can understand why ego feels the way it does, why it's attacking, why it is always turning inwards, trying to attack. But that's from the false premise that it can see what reality is, it can make an accurate assessment of where I actually am. If we had a computer program to assess the weather, for example, coming weather over the next few days, and we only input certain parameters into it, and we missed out a whole lot of vital things, could that limited software then be blamed for inaccurate and an inaccurate assessment of the forecast of the weather? Not at all, could it? So when you realize ego is doing this out of no fault of its own, it thinks it can see reality. It thinks that what it thinks about reality is the same as reality. And therefore, it believes absolutely in what it feels is true, and therefore is trying to get to where it wants to be, where it thinks you need to be. So as you come to understand this, you fall in love with yourself again, and you disempower ego and its attacking strategies, because you're no longer pushing against them, and you're no longer agreeing with, you're no longer striving to be better than you are. If there's any striving at all, it's a consistent effort to see what's already here about you right now in your human beingness. The perfection that's appearing as your body and mind. We're very good at seeing a perfection that's appearing as the formless, empty, unmanifest self. What about the manifest body and mind? Mustn't that also be the same perfection? Can anything other than perfection arise out of the unmanifest perfection? Not so much, and not at all. So very, very good. And as you fall in love with yourself, it's easy to fall in love with everyone else. Everyone has people in their life who are their biggest critics, who are their greatest teachers, let's just say. And those are ones that'll teach you most about love. That you can absolutely dislike someone prefer never to see them again or be around them, out of respect for your own self, and also love them at the same time. And that's a profound state to exist in and as, and that's what you're heading towards. So very, very good. It's it is the same. There isn't any in here or out there anyway. So as I love in here, I'm going to automatically be falling in love out there, and vice versa. If I can love my worst enemy, I can love my the highest inspiration, that one being or several beings that inspire me most, when there's no difference in the way I feel about them. Some of them I'd like to be around, some of them I wouldn't. You know, then we're in quite an advanced place there, aren't we? Wonderful, wonderful. There is no in here or out there, is there? As we see in lesson two with the glass. So you're really starting to see through the illusion here with this. It's very exciting. Okay, next one. Thanks, Helen, for your feedback. As you suggested, I did an overall assessment as to where I was in May 2020 and where I am now. Yes, a long way walked, yet at the same time was the feeling that it was difficult to practice or focus or concentrate on the noumenon and unconditional love. After this morning's class, someone at the DTE asked a very good question, one that I wanted to ask but did not know how to phrase it. And there it was, the veil lifted. Her question was about, I do not recall it precisely, in brackets, if the body senses this opening and good feeling, then is the body sensing the noumenon? That brought me to another shift and level of the self. Thanks, Helen. Love you. Love you too. So it's good, of course, that somebody asks you a question when you don't know how to formulate it. The key thing to really, that I really want to get across that I didn't in the class yesterday, I'm not really wanting to confuse a lot of beings, was that the body is a phenomenon, and no phenomena can at all can sense the noumenon. Because it's like asking the fish in the bowl to sense the room or the house that it's living in. It's never seen it, cannot see it, because it's only in one location, a phenomena. It can, however, feel the effect of when our attention goes onto the noumenon. The body is a reflection of the noumenon, the rising, appearing in the noumenon. So it's affected by whatever attention is on. When attention is on phenomena or thought, the body feels contracted, very, very negative. The longer those thoughts are focused upon, the worse the body feels, the more life force is pinched off, the more the chakras close up, the more meridians get screwed up, and it all goes to, well, we know where that goes. But the more attention's on the noumenon, it doesn't feel like anything, the noumenon, does it? It doesn't have any tangible qualities at all. It's not even a feeling, but it has an effect upon the body when we notice the noumenon. And there's nothing wrong with that at all, but just to recognize the body cannot sense the noumenon because it is insentient of itself. It's like saying that a thought can sense the awareness that it arises in. A thought is insentient. It has no power of itself. The whole mind is insentient. And so is the body. It has a rudimentary intelligence, of course, given, borrowed, taken from the self, the noumenon. But when the life force is gone from the body, what can it sense? Absolutely nothing at all, can it? It's called dead then. It has no capacity to sense anything or feel anything or think anything without you. You are that power, that life force that flows through that. So just to little further guidance, it may seem difficult to practice and focus on the noumenon. But is that your ego trying to do it? Or is that right now, effortlessly, you're aware of these words, aren't you? And that is not happening only in your ears. If you were to put your fingers in your ears, you would immediately notice that you can't hear anything. You're aware of no external sound. Take your fingers out, aware of sound, aware of no external sound, aware of external sound. Awareness is there before the senses, before anything arises. Awareness is there, not dependent on anything at all. So it's great you're having this shift, really, really good. And just to clear us up, you know, that it is tricky with these subtle phenomena, as I was saying in the class yesterday, these subtle phenomena of the way the body feels when we tune into the noumenon. And sometimes people get stuck on this high-pitched whine or whistle that is the body translating the increased life force and vibration, the higher frequencies that begin to flow through the body. Especially if there's any blockage in the third eye chakra, then there'll be this kind of high-pitched whine or whistle, or some people feel it as a vibration. Sometimes it's a hum, you know, sometimes it's a palpable feeling that people use many words to describe it, but it is still not there in deep sleep, and you would not be able to be aware of it without a body. So it is a phenomenon nonetheless. Wonderful, wonderful. It's effortless to notice the noumenon. Sometimes we still make it hard work, don't we? So, okay. Okay. Let's move to the next one. Hi, Helen. This week, strong money issues came up for me several times. I feel this is a core issue of my ego, as it was traumatically internalized from childhood that money is akin to oxygen. Oh, I remember that one. And if you don't have it in constant supply, you will die. So as the identity is switching over, it makes sense to me this core ego survival issue is coming up. The causality statement is, I feel panicky around money because it is a trauma for me related to this body's survival. So applying that statement to lesson two, because I believe the body's trauma reactions are around money, because I believe that the body's trauma reactions around money is bad and unwanted, I feel immediate anxiety when the body starts to react and gets worse, and when I get angry because it's not going away. I then access the noumenon and bring up these traumatic money fears and intuitively realize that the noumenon and this panicky fear are one and the same. Energy undulating like a wave in the ocean. Abiding as this unconditional love, the body's reactions become easier to manage, but they don't go away when triggered. I feel the only way I can dissolve this fear is to transcend the identification with body altogether, with a full conviction that I am the formless one and was never in any danger. But this panic is so unpleasant when it arises that my ego wants it gone. However, when I meditate on this, I can see there is nothing separate than the noumenon to get rid of. It's like the ego is stuck in an endless loop of rejecting itself. And even when this is seen, it doesn't stop. Is it best to simply ignore this endless pattern of sudden anxiety and rejection when it arises by using the inquiry question, is this true? This trauma pattern is a or my problem. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Thanks and many blessings to you. Thank you. So this statement, because you've changed, I feel panicky around money because it is a trauma for me related to the body's survival. So you've identified cause. According to mind, the cause seems to be the money, lack of money. And the issue is what feelings it brings, the effect is the feelings it brings up inside you, right? And then you flip that on its head. And you've said, okay, it must be the other way around. Because I believe the body's trauma reactions around money is bad and unwanted, I feel immediate anxiety when the body starts to react and gets worse when I get angry because it's not going away. So you pointed to later in your writing here that it's about survival. Any anxiety is always fear. Fear is anxiety, panic. Even extreme fear, it is just fear. So if you can see that in those moments when that fear arises, that strong anxiety, that some part of you is still very convinced that you need something to survive, i.e. in this situation, money. And the other most primary underlying assumption there is that you can cease to exist, isn't it? As you've pointed to later on. If I were you, I would direct all of your attention to questioning that, because the amount of fear that we feel, it may seem that I'm feeling fear about driving on icy roads, or fear of not having enough money, or fear of my physical death, or fear of, you know, many, many things, fear of spiders, anything at all. But we can see through lesson two that it must be that I still am not convinced 100% that I cannot die. I cannot cease to exist. There is a difference between the end of the body existing and the end of you existing. I know you know that, but I'm saying even when we're transcending the fear of physical death, we can still feel on some level ourselves to be a separate being that can come, that an energetic form that can come to an end, a separate soul or individual self. Can the wave on the ocean ever come to an end? Not really, if it is the ocean. It's the ocean and the wave at the same time, isn't it? So, and in this analogy, you are, this wave that you are continues indefinitely, cannot end either. And I would suggest really putting a lot of attention over the next couple of days and weeks on this survival fear. If I know with a deep conviction that I cannot come to an end because there is nothing that I need to survive, if I'm dependent on this, you know, A, B, and C to survive, then if A, B, and C run out, I'm in deep trouble, aren't I? And I spent a lot of time looking at this. This was my Vasana 2, very, very, very much. And from as early as I can remember, there was just not enough money, and there was this constant fear that you're describing. It was very much akin to oxygen. In its own strange way, very much worshipped in the house, money, you know, that it was almost the root of all our troubles and also the Holy Grail at the same time, in a strange way. So what does the formlessness that you are need to survive? And I would suggest looking at that. You know, does it need a body even? Does it need anything to survive? Is there anything that it is dependent upon? Because the lack of money and the body's survival is mirroring this back to you, this idea that's still being believed inside. It's reflecting back to you that you depend upon something for your existence. And it's just not true of the formlessness that you are. And it's just to clarify, because when we really, I spent some time investigating, and it's actually a chapter in Now That You Are Formless that would help with this, about I can't exactly remember the the chapter title, but it's about, I think it's You Are the Effortless One. And I really, when I first examined that term, it was what does effortless mean? It was, oh yeah, I'm not doing anything. And I got that aspect of it, but there's a deeper meaning to it. Effortless means there is no effort needed to sustain my existence at all. That it is automatic and guaranteed, and that I don't even need a body to exist. I'm not dependent upon it at all. It's not even from the ultimate place, the ultimate seeing. The body isn't even enhancing my existence. And I don't mean that in a cold way to the body, but if we still have some subtle feeling inside that when the body goes, I will be diminished, it won't be as much fun, that the fun, the joy of existence is in looking through the senses, or being able to interact with other beings, and all that will be not available to me after the senses have gone, the body's gone. Then I'll be fearing the end of the body somehow, very, very subtly, because I'll feel it will impact me. It will diminish my experience. I'll still be here. I might have seen that. I'll still be everywhere, but, you know, and it's the but, isn't it? That slight but. So I would really suggest spending some time looking at this. Because if there's unconditional love of it, that's great. But if it's not going away, then it's just pointing that there's something else to look at. So what does it really mean that you are the effortless one? Do you depend upon anything for your survival and also for your joy? Will your joy, your peace, be any less prevalent without the body? Is it dependent right now upon the senses? Is that where the joy is coming from? The passion and the purpose and the feeling of being you, you know, what makes you you? Does it need a body at all? So I really suggest putting some focus on that. And then that will begin to reflect as not even needing money for the joy, you know, the reflection. You'll feel as much joy whether you have an absence or presence of enough money, which of course then, as soon as you don't need money at all in your vibration, it will be showing up in abundance. And again, I just want to point out, you probably realize this anyway, but just in case, that this is coming back so strongly now because it is the core of everything, isn't it? All of us, and you pointed to that even, it's the core of ego, but all of us transcend the body-mind to some degree. Oh my God, I don't need that to survive. I can see that the formlessness is not, it's the ground from which the body arises and the body is it anyway. But sometimes we still have inside, through just lack of investigating and realizing it's there, some sense that life will be less without a body, that being embodied is better than being without a body. And again, this is just all an assumption that you're in one place because you're looking through all human bodies. And when one goes, you can be in, when this body mind goes, ironically, I might not actually notice, you know, because I know I'm looking through all of them. I'm the one asking this question as well. So again, notice the focus on only one body mind and its survival. That's really part and parcel of having a location, isn't it? Feeling a location. So I hope that gives you direction to focus on with this. It's coming up just to refine this subtle thing really now that to point you in the right direction. Will you be diminished at all when the body's gone? Do you need it for your survival at all? And do you need it for your joy? Do you need it for your aliveness? Do you need it for your entertainment? Do you need it for your purpose, your passion? You know, there's a few huge myths that human beings have, such as my life's work must cease when my body goes. You know, we see that we have this idea about teachers as well, that once they leave their body, they can no longer help me. And you might find that exact opposite is true. I certainly found that. I've got more effective help from teachers that aren't in a body. This core feeling that human beings have that physical existence is better than no physical existence. And that physical existence is to be prized above everything else. But, and again, I'm not knocking having a body. It's great. Enjoy it while it's there. But just really investigate this idea. You see where I'm going with this, right? And as you look at the root of this, then the reflection of the money will become more stable. It'll even itself out. It's success, again, in your unconditional love of it and acceptance of it. It's showing itself to you now for healing. And it feels safe to say, please look at this for me. So wonderful, wonderful. Very good. Okay, next one. Hi, Helen. This week, again, I've been reading from your book, How to Fall in Love with Yourself. I've managed to read some of the book each day. My practice has been the same as last week. Basically, accepting each moment as it comes and trying not to push anything away or suppress anything. It feels as I continue with this practice that I can see my beliefs, opinions, and patterns of behavior more clearly. When these beliefs play out, I try to challenge them as best I can. just with the question, is that belief really true? The funny thing is, I've noticed I'm trying to eat a little better. I've also spent a bit more time actually sitting and meditating. I'm really enjoying sitting and meditating just for the fun of it. I also feel I'm engaging in life a bit more, and there's a wish to contribute more to life. I was wondering if these actions, like eating better, meditating more, and wanting to contribute more, are early signs of loving myself a little more. Thanks for all your teachings. Much love. So, yeah, if they're done for the fun of them, if they're done because you enjoy them, which you've pointed to here, meditating just for the fun of it, then yes, that is signs of the love beginning to really trickle down into your actions. At first, we love unconditionally, and then our thoughts become more loving, and then our emotions eventually become more pleasant, and then our actions come more from that loving place. And you can, when somebody raised this in the DTE Q&A, you can do something just for the fun of it, can't you? Like, I can hold satsang because it's fun, you know. And why do I run the course? Not to help other beings wake up, not to help the self recognize itself even. The only motivation I have left now is because it's fun, because I love to do it, because it brings more life force into the body, because it makes me feel alive. It makes me feel passionate and purposeful and a real sense of contribution on a temporary thing, because there's nobody else to contribute to, but you know what I mean. So it's not the actions per se, but why they're happening. Because you can sit in meditation and say, yeah, I really need to do this 20 minutes and I'm supposed to do it today and I really don't want to do it because I'm trying to get somewhere. Or you can sit and love the fact that you had this completely restless meditation, but it felt good to just sit, you know. And that's the key. It's, why are we doing these things? Are we contemplating if a belief is true because we really would love to see what is actually real, or because we're trying to get away from something, some pain? And there's always going to be both, isn't there? There's both motivations. It's just which one is growing that's key. So what you said here is evidence that that love is beginning to filter down into the mind and body in a very noticeable way. It's very hard to abuse the body in any way when you love it, you know. So that'll translate to what you're eating, what you're drinking, how much fresh air you want to get, you know, your kind of lifestyle. All of that eventually will begin to be, am I going for a walk? Because I just want the feel, I love the feel of fresh air in my lungs. Or am I going for a walk because I'm supposed to walk, and if I don't, I'm at higher risk of heart disease. You know, both of those are fine, but which one is growing for you? Can you see that? Yeah. So it sounds like very much that it is. Wonderful. Okay, so last one. Hi, Helen. In last week's homework, I asked about how to move past being stuck, but wasn't clear as to where I'm stuck. I've always been less than accepting of my body's limitations and would have thought finding unconditional love for my body would be my sticking point. However, this has been relatively easy. Other areas seem to be harder. On looking at this more, I seem more able to be unconditionally loving when I am on my own. When with other beings, like at work, I seem to see flaws and failings rather than unconditional love. I have been looking at this through the statement process, and I've had times this week where I see this and recognize the conditional love and accept it, but not every time. I seem to kind of be accepting, then go back to the shoulds and shouldn'ts. So a lot of us find it hardest to love ourselves unconditionally. It's very, very normal. And if we are interacting with other beings, sometimes that can seem more challenging at first, that we tend to, it's easier first, isn't it, to pick up someone's opinion about me rather than stick to my own opinion about me, which I'm developing as an aspect of loving myself. And really, if we don't look at that as a bad thing, where, you know, this is why I asked you to send me more feedback, because where you're getting stuck is right where you can love yourself more, isn't it? So if you're judging yourself when you're around other beings, look at why that is occurring. Are you listening to what they think more than what you are seeing about yourself? Are you trying to form conclusions about what they think about you? Would you really know what they are anyway? And do they really see you anyway? Are they really expressing a valid opinion of you, given that their ego is forming a thought picture of you and telling you what if somebody was to say to me, you know, I don't like you. You're just a not a very nice person. Then, you know, I would examine that to see if what they're saying is true. I wouldn't just dismiss it, but I would also know that what they're saying is coming through what they think about me. And it's not actually based on me at all. That I could be the complete opposite to what they think. And they still wouldn't know because they are still assuming that their thoughts about me are reality. That what they think is true about me is reality. And when we recognize this with ourselves, that I'm taking more measure from what I think about myself than what I actually see. When I self-inquire, I find this effortless, still, silent perfection that is the real being, the noumenon. Why then do I allow my thoughts to contradict that perfection? Do I have to listen to those so closely? Do I have to judge myself? And can those thoughts and the egoic way of perceiving myself ever really recognize what I actually am? Not so much. And then when somebody else is talking, offering an opinion on my behavior or actions or even my own self, how would they know, actually? They are working through two sets of filters. What they think about themselves and what they think about you is also untrue. And assumptions based on assumptions, Chinese whispers. So how could ego, somebody else's ego or yours, ever really fully know yourself? It's easy to unconditionally love the body because we know it reflects back to us what we think and feel. Where we don't love fully is where we conditionally love ourselves. Well, I'm screwing this up still. If I got this right, my body would reflect that back to me. There's the conditional love of ego. You see, up for self, isn't it? For the self, for yourself. And other beings will be reflecting that back to you as well. They have to, while you still are listening to this inner criticism and believing it to any degree. So ego is like one of those, you know, those, you know, when I have a general election here in England, the actual polling stops and then there's all these experts that run around pointing sticks and waving and the swing on ometer and, you know, it's going to go this way or this way. I'm sure it's the same in every country, but, and they've got all these opinions about what's going to happen, what the outcome of this election is going to be based on statistics and how many people turned up and which major areas voted this way or that way. And really, they don't know anything at all, do they? It's all just talk. It's based on what they think is happening. And this is really what ego is doing. It's like jumping around trying to wave a stick and go, this is what's happening. So you must be willing eventually to come to accept that what your ego thinks about you is utterly wrong, utterly. Don't make it wrong. Just recognize it cannot see what's true. This root idea that you should be better than you are is nonsense. That would only be true if ego could actually see how you are. It's like driving someone to Scotland and then asking them to tell us what London is like when they've never been to London. And they're not allowed to access the internet or anything to Google what London is like. They could only give you an opinion on what they think it's like. This is what ego is doing all the time. All the time, because that's all it can do through its own structure. It forms conclusions about things. So have a chew on that and give me some feedback this week if you would. You're loving your body unconditionally because you're not blaming that. Because it's only a reflection. Your body's reflecting back to you what you think and feel. And that's good that you're loving it unconditionally. But who are you blaming then? You know, and is that valid still? And any inner or outer criticism, as we said with the first piece of homework, is coming from what that person, whether it's you or someone else, what would they know anyway? Really, the only person that's qualified to judge you is an awakened being, and they absolutely couldn't do that anyway because they can see you clearly and you can see your own perfection clearly. We just leave ego where it is, recognize its limitations and those of other beings' egos as well. Egos have been talking to egos for millennia. Wars have started, all of that, right? Over egos talking to egos. And nobody's ever really had a real, honest interaction based on reality. Strange, but true. So why don't you find out how you really are, actually? Not through the eyes of others, or even through the eyes of your own egoic sense of self. There must be perfection here in this moment if we're willing to see it. Good progress. And please do give me some feedback on this. I'd love to hear. Lovely. Okay, so we'll take a break there and we'll continue with part two. Thank you.